Talk Radio.
Welcome to Right from the Left Coast. I'm your host, Linda, coming at you from Oceanside. We've got a great day today. I know. There's no humidity. It's beautiful. It's a perfect summer day. Thanks to everyone at patriotfamilies.com. That's Patriot Families with a Y-S. And Hollis Buchanan and all the great folks at Patriot Families have brought this radio show to us. Welcome, everybody, Jomer, Yo, Guest, and Ron, for joining us today. And I just had to play that song because we talk about transparency, and the word cellophane came to mind because those of us who are awake can see right through the old POTUS that's in the Oval. And it's amazing with the speeches that come out of this guy, you know, and the audience. I wonder about the audiences because they haven't seen the mask come off, and they're applauding things like you didn't build that when talking about jobs, and you feel like you're wrapped in cellophane. Okay, good one. Yeah, that's how I felt in Indiana, but nonetheless, we had a great time. And I didn't miss the TV, and I didn't miss the cell phones and all the electronics. It was absolutely amazing. You know, some of these people in the audience who applaud him when he talks about civilian armies and fundamentally transforming America and, you know, the Marxist rhetoric, it's because these people have the brain cells of a fruit fly. They wouldn't know Marx from Engels from their next-door neighbors. It's very sad. But the rest of us are trying to pay attention. And I was talking about earlier that one of my stories was going to be from a Mike Slater show earlier. I think it was last week, was talking about free market capitalism. And it was the gentleman who is the CEO and owner of Magalite Corporation, I believe here in California. And this gentleman was a product of a very, very dark time in our history, but this was, of course, in Germany, and it was post-World War II, just after it. And war-torn Germany, people were just literally starving. And so this gentleman called in, and I'm giving credit to 760 KFMB here in town that Mike Slater brought this to our attention. And I'm doing this from memory, so, you know, hopefully I won't get anything wrong, and I'm giving credit where it's due. And the guy was, he's 82 years old now, and he came to this country after the World War II. And, yes, welcome FT and everyone in the chat room. He started this company. Basically, we go back to his poor mother trying to keep them both alive right after the war. And they were so poor, and once they ran out of food and money, she sold China in her dishes cabinet, and she sold furniture. And when she ran out of that, then they were again starving. The poor man explained that he was so skinny and hungry that you could see, he could see all of his ribs in the small mirrors that they had in their rooms. And he came to, I think he was about 15 or 16 at the time. This was probably 1945, 1946. And so to feed him and herself to save him, because she wanted him to be able to come to America eventually to have a better life, he found her one day with a wooden chisel and like a hammer, and she was taking two teeth out of her mouth because they had gold, so she could sell the gold in her teeth so they could eat. And he was horrified because he could see the blood coming from her mouth, and he says, "Mom, what's wrong?" And she says, "Oh, I had to take these teeth out because they were hurting me so much." She was lying to him. And then when she got the money for the food, she got the corn and the cornmeal and things that they could eat, and she felt a lot better. And she says, now, you know, the hope is just around the corner. We're going to make it. We're going to be okay. So eventually he came to America and, you know, the Maglite flashlights, which I have one of them, and they're really wonderful. And he wanted something made that was well, and build a better mousetrap and something people could have that was made here in America. This man started that company after he had worked very hard to save money and save money to be his own businessman. He started it with $175, and he's a multimillionaire at this point. And he told Mike Slater, he says, please tell all of your listeners to vote for representatives and people in offices of every level who believe in free market capitalism, because it's the only salvation of freedom, and it's the only way to go. And it was such a moving story that I wanted to share that with you. And when I hear stories like that and I hear the POTUS talking about you didn't build that, I just want to tear my hair out. And that was just one I wanted to share with you folks. And I'm so glad you guys are here listening today. I also have a little piece of history. I've been reading this incredible book I mentioned to Terry the other day on her show, The Miracles of Freedom, Seven Tipping Points to Save the World. And I'm just going to give a brief synopsis here of the first introduction. It says, along the Southern Nile River, 1876 B.C., so we're going back a ways, and I hope I can pronounce this name correctly, Akhenaten Amsu was a strong man at more than 6 feet and 200 pounds, with the sharp face of his Philistine fathers and the olive skin of a mother whose ancestors had been lost in 1,000 years of time. He stood above the other slaves in many uncomfortable ways. With the average Egyptian just more than 150 pounds, it was obvious that Amsu had been taken care of at least in the early part of his life, for he was not only tall but broad, and though the last few years had been terribly debilitating, he was still strong. As he toiled, his back to the sun, the day passed exactly as the day before had passed, and though he didn't realize it, this day was his 17th birthday. He had remembered he might have taken a moment to consider the life that lay ahead. Nothing but toil and work and death, a million tons of rock to cut and shape and move. Sometime around the age of 30, he would almost certainly be dead. The irony wasn't lost on Amsu, for he was not a stupid man. Tens of thousands of his fellow slaves would work until they died, all to build nothing but a temple in which they would bury another man. Another piece of history we can learn a lot from, because it sounds like what we're doing today with the redistribution and the theft. We just toil and toil to prop up a system that is failing. There was also a lot of really good information this week on the internet, and I wanted to, before I get any callers, since we're only 10 minutes into the show, want to give you a synopsis. It was so well done, this particular article on Tea Party Nation, that I commented to the author and said, fabulous, thank you. I've been saying this for quite a while, because I have studied what she was studying, so I'll get to that. Anyway, it starts, just around the corner, Obama's Age of New Leninism. Few worship Vladimir Lenin anywhere, the founder of the Soviet Communist State, 1918 to 1991, and only the same kind of idiot revolutionary persists in advancing the Obama socialist communism agenda in the United States. Mythological heroes of destitute idiots revive for a time on the taste of the amaranth, the imaginary flower that never fades, but President Boris Yeltsin symbolically and practically buried the vestiges of Lenin in the years of 1993 through 95, and eventually we too will wrap our Saturday fish catch in Obama speeches and cliches, burn his posters and truncated effigies, and decide that neither was a clever politician, tactician as a president. Even Newmark, reporter for Deal Journal, Wall Street Journal, told us back in July of 2009 at a press conference then, Obama still has no grasp of the everyday realities faced by Americans, America's small businessmen. They can't make payroll, Newmark recalled, but the president is directing them to buy LED light bulbs and urging them to contact clean energy CEOs. recently in Virginia at a rally, he told those same businessmen 3 years later, on July 2012, they didn't deserve their success without the government's persistent leadership that gave them their success. Newmark would probably still call it, as he did in 2009, the man Obama possessed by an unshakable conviction in the power of the state over the individual and of the future over the past. However, unlike Lenin, Obama is too stupid to realize near his fourth year, as Lenin realized after his second year in 1920, that a new economic policy was needed that incorporated all small businessmen to bring the American economy back to life. Obama has been a pariah through regulation to all private businesses, and when he drops his guard and shows his true skin, we see he really wants a small business to be a de facto vassal of the federal government and its royal unions. He's a failed communist, a complete mind turd next to Lenin's more functional and analytical mind. The Soviet experiment at least beat barely Nazi fascism from 42 to 45, a great success. Obama killed bin Laden, his only foreign policy success, and failed with another 386,000 first-time unemployed claims this week, unemployment claims. 7/19/2012, to reach any other standard of economic achievement, as his moribund recession rivals in its length only his personal rigid ideology as the social communist leader of the United States. That is what history will write of him disparagingly. That is, if historians have such freedom to write honestly during the rest of this decade and after, it is too late for Obama to pick up Lenin's worshipful crown and wear it, because he can't escape the perils and turmoil of his own mouth and the mistakes his handlers can't erase when he stops reading the teleprompter. He keeps giving Romney many blessed dons to use in the election battles ahead if Romney is cognizant enough to go on the attack. Obama is really a wayward Odysseus who returns home after 4 years of struggles his first term, only to burn the whole place down again with his torch of fresh taxes and regulations. As stupid as Nero was, yes, in burning Rome, while telling us private business is doing fine, with 46 million people on food stamps and 35 million people under and unemployed throughout his undesired presidency. My favorite rivet to remove from Obama's sinking ship economy for June 2012, 88,000 people received Social Security insurance that month, while only 60,000 jobs were created in the nation's industries. That's a burning landscape. Lenin would be truly amazed at Obama's failure to recognize that communist socialist labor, in order to succeed, has first to overthrow capitalist ownership and managers, not just with idle words, cliches, and vindictive rants, but with a brutal revolutionary rebellion. The October Revolution of 1918 was a big thing that took 2.5 years to destroy the Allied, including U.S., soldiers' intervention to destroy the Red Armies of Lenin. That victory made the little things like the organization of Soviet economic life on the new basis, communist labor by an advanced proletariat, in other words, Soviet Communist Party, possible. Obama's pitiful rabble, the Wall Street, Boston et al., occupier groups, never came close to reaching their proletariat power grab goals, because Obama and the Chicago progressives obviously never read any of the hundreds of speeches written by Lenin and other Soviet leaders in the 1920s. Lenin never put the cart before the horse. Obama's idiocy did just that. But Obama's hard-left economic policies are literally a passive form of state terror without a Joseph Stalin figure as of yet. But certainly with a second term in the White House, this near-failed and dissected Leninist figure in his first term could metamorphosize into a rigid ideologist whose executive orders become the harshest orders of a very embittered neo-constitutional dictator. His first atrocity has always been to lead our country into slow bankruptcy, with its $54 trillion in debt growing by more than $1 trillion in debt each Obama year that passes. He has passive acceptance of this measure and drive on all sides except for conservatives. But Obama has more than one trick up his sleeve. I believe he wants exactly what Lenin wanted, cart after the horse, in April 11, 1920. It's the one big of the big things every socialist power horse wants in the aftermath of the destruction of capitalism. To Lenin, it was evident it would take years, decades, to create a new labor discipline in the raw survival year of 1920 Sovietism. He wrote vividly of this in a letter called From the Destruction of the Old Social System to the Creation of the New. Lenin wrote in a 1920 speech, communist labor, in the narrowest sense, is labor performed gratis for the benefit of society. Labor performed not as a definite duty, not for the purpose of obtaining a right of certain products, not according to previously established and legally fixed quotas, but voluntary labor, irrespective of quotas. It is labor performed without expectation of reward, without reward as a condition. Labor performed because it has become a habit to work for the common good, and because of a conscious realization that has become a habit of the necessity of working for the common good. By creating a huge entitlement society, with Lenin's, his own words from that 1920 speech, perseverance, persistence, willingness, determination, and ability to test things 100 times, to correct them 100 times, but to achieve the goal, come what may. In this method, I know Obama has learned Lenin correctly, break down the synthesis of the bourgeoisie businessman who he identified in his recent Virginia speech as his enemy, and clarify his enemy, this enemy of the entitlement masses, who he must feed by leveling the entire middle-class work ethic. Split the workers from the non-workers in a permanent division, social and economic dependency for his myriad entitlers, which will reach the point of no return during his second term, whereby private business will be forced to feed perpetually the conglomerate animal of the public's giant federal government, the massive blue state governments, incapable of balancing their budgets, and all their combined proletariat unions, therefore without expectation of reward, and as a condition of its allowance to exist, small and large businesses will serve the new Leninist version of labor in Obama's revolution. They will be made to abide by the habit to work for the common good. Individual business success will be a curse in the forward slogan of the Obama revolution. Any fool businessman raising a capitalist issue against extended taxes and regulations decreed by Obama law will face crushing and desperate resistance. Obama will continue to wear out the Republican majority in Congress, should it still exist in 2013. If Obama pulls off this coup of communist labor after victory next November, then Lenin will be pulling Obama's cart as the horse that skipped the bloody revolution part that never happened, while the Republicans and conservatives propped up Romney, who, like they, never saw it coming. The subtlety of Obama's chess moves here were beyond their comprehension. If they sleep or keep looking backward, then Obama's horse and cart may sweep over them. So that's kind of where we are today. I guess my guest from local didn't want to hear it because she thinks I'm crazy. Hi, Mr. Bill. And we have Jomer, FT, Yo, Ron, and Bill. Welcome, everyone. That was an interesting article. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. 646-378-0321. Oh, I'm glad things are happening good for your parents. Hopefully everything's going well. Again, I hadn't gotten any too many comments on that speech. It was a very good article written by one of the people who does some articles on Tea Party Nation, and I know I couldn't send it out to it was a blog put up by, let me see, hold on, Paul Szymanski, July 24th, 2012 at 4:37 p.m. Eastern. So it's called Just Around the Corner, Obama's Age of New Leninism, and I just thought they covered it quite well. Anyway, so I was just reading the comments. I just wanted to say that I was playing the cellophane piece of music because the Obama regime is tanking basically in the polls. Of course, they were talking about it last night on Hannity and Greta's show, which I was just kind of half tuning into and reading my book, but I think that the media is lying about some of the numbers, and I'm just hoping that it keeps tanking and tanking, although we get nervous when we think about what he will do to try to steal the election or completely try to stop the elections. And I said, if he tries that, I don't know whether the masses will rise up or the Illuminati will take him out. I'm not sure. But again, if anyone wants to weigh in on it, 646-378-0321. So I'm going to go ahead and type that in here. Oh, good. Oh, FT, you found it. Awesome. Yeah, it's a long one. I'm sorry it took so much time, but it was really written. 3, 8. Yes, and also we wanted to give a shout out to Ron. I'm hoping he's feeling better. I know having the flu is just awful. So, and I noticed he popped online, so I gave him that little message to come join us. I'm so glad you guys are all here. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I was watching a little bit of Glenn's show, and he's gearing up for his Restoring Love situation, the event in Dallas coming this weekend. So I'll be watching as much as I can on GBTV. That should be a lot of fun. He's got 35,000 volunteers coming to help him distribute food to folks and to do all their community things that they want to do. And I know tomorrow is his free pack thing, and I think Ted Cruz is speaking. I like Ted because he's very adamant against Agenda 21 and spoke publicly on Glenn's show many months ago about it, and I thought, wow. And so Jim DeMint likes Ted, and he's trying to help him get elected in Texas as senator. Bill says, most of the polls we are seeing have 12% more Dems answering the polls. Ah, be lies. Yeah, it seems to be their modus operandi, absolutely. They love to lie. And we have a complicit liberal media that just, you know, is horrible. So anyway, so what the person that I had invited to speak is probably very busy. We'll see if that person calls in. The other person who was the guest, I believe, was my friend in downtown San Diego, and she didn't like what I was talking about, so she left. Unfortunately, it's just, you know, you can't get some people to even listen to an hour show and call in or type in or, you know, have a real good debate or a real good dialogue on political issues. And it's really sad. I've tried, I've reached out, and it's just something that, you know, it's so frustrating. And I know Ron was typing earlier that he wants to become a liberal because ignorance is bliss. It is true. Some of these people, they just refuse to educate themselves, and we all get that frustration level. I have a lady that comes in. In fact, they were here earlier. She brings her daughter to help her, who the little girl is going into the fifth grade this coming fall. And we talk about stuff, and I give them little pocket constitutions, and I tell them how important history is, and they're so sweet, and they're such good students. And, of course, Rosa's Hispanic, and the kids are Hispanic, but they're working hard, and they understand the work ethic, and she wants the kids to study hard so they don't have to do hard work like she does all her life. And I said, well, being bilingual, the young girl who's about 10 or 11, it will help her if she understands things. And I always show her my books and tell her how important it is to know about the founding of this country and why it happened and how it happened and all these things, and put God first. And they love it. They eat it up. So it's really important. And I did that one little book, Meet Christopher Columbus, that I wrote for kids. I gave her family one of those too. And these guys read, man. They love it. So I'm really, really happy that I can share with people and at least get some folks on the right track and help keep them on the right track. I did talk to John Hollis yesterday. I called early in the morning and got an appointment on the 31st, Tuesday at 11 o'clock my time in the morning, to speak to the mayor of Oceanside privately for at least 20 minutes and Councilwoman Sanchez. So I'm looking forward to that. I got all the information. I'm handing them these small package of information as handouts on Agenda 21. They don't probably know about it, and I want to make sure that they do know. And I've got Bill, I think. Hello.
Hello, Linda.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Kind of ticked off at my congressman. I call him about Agenda 21. I can't get an answer. I write on his page and send him emails and faxes, and I can't get an answer on it. About that bilingual stuff, that'll work great if we're all going to be Spanish.
Well, no, but I'm saying if things turn around, if we can turn it back around, I mean, anybody who can speak fluently two languages, I give them credit. And these kids are bright and they're hardworking and they're, you know, I think they're going down the right road.
I have no problem with that as long as they're legally here and stuff. But
right.
I think we have a major problem in our country when everybody wants to push a bilingual thing and three-fourths
right.
of these people don't even understand English.
No, no, I get that. But I can, this kid's like 11 years old and she can interpret back and forth like... like she was working for, you know, the UN. I mean, she's amazing. She's very bright and adorable, and they're good kids. They're well-mannered. They've got good ethics at home. They've got good moral standards, and I applaud them. So,
well,
you know.
That's how it used to be when people came to our country and immigrated and followed the laws and stuff,
yep.
was they did do that, and a lot of them would have to recommunicate back between their parents from the English they were learning and translate the stuff. But what we have today is a consistent push, a directive that we must speak Spanish here in Indiana, even in our kindergartens. You got to be able to count to 10 in Spanish. Well, we didn't do that for any other group immigrating to our
Absolutely.
Country.
Absolutely.
And that's part of destroying our culture because it's handily. And I do think that some people do need to speak bilingual. You do to communicate around the world and stuff, but when you
right.
start mandating a language
right.
over other languages, when I was a child in school and got to the age where we had languages, it was an elective course.
Yes,
you
it is.
Got to choose what language you were going to
yes.
learn. Now it is being forced.
Oh, I know. No, I get the picture because when I was in high school, I agree. I do remember. I think it was my third year. I did study French for a whole semester, and I enjoyed it. And I had a background in it because being a little kid, and I grew up taking like two lessons a week in ballet. Ballet is all French language, and so I could relate to it. And you know, it was fun. You know, but it was definitely something I chose. And this is your point, and my point as well. If you're like college age or say a senior in high school, and you are really adamant about learning Italian or something or whatever you want to learn, I mean, you just go get the books and you take a course, or you get the Rosetta Stone now and you just do it. You know, that's wonderful. That's improving your mind. But not the way they're doing. No, I know what you're saying. That's completely
yeah.
off the wall, backwards.
It is making us cater to the. I'll be honest, it's making us cater to the ones who are coming here illegally because they're not trying to learn our language. They're not trying to assimilate or become a part of our culture. They are trying
right.
to change our culture. They're following you in Agenda 21.
Yeah, yeah they're
not even realizing it.
Yeah. Oh, I just saw there was I think it was my buddy Jeff Schwick who keeps his eye on this immigration problem. Apparently there's a lot of Hispanics and radical groups in Anaheim, which isn't that far from me. I mean, I could get up there in like half an hour with no traffic. And there's riots, and the police are trying to quell this mess. They're the protesters because I don't know what they're protesting. All I know is there's a lot of illegals, and La Raza, I think, is behind it. So it's coming. It's coming to fruition.
And there we go.
I'm
La Raza is a racist hate organization
yep.
who advocates for taking back the Texas
oh,
and
yeah.
other parts of the country and all this and that. And actually, they're advocating that the whole country belongs to them. And
oh, I know.
They are funded by taxpayer dollars.
Sure.
They get taxpayer dollars to attack America.
Well, I'd like you to name me one thing that doesn't. Our taxpayer money to nefarious deals at this point. It's mind-boggling. And
it has gotten so far and so past any reality. Realistically, there's no way all the things they're doing are going to help this country. Everything they're doing is to destroy this country.
I get
you can't get the GOP to stand up and talk against Agenda 21.
No, I know.
More than you could the Democrats. You know, it ain't our elected that are doing anything. It's us, the people, that are doing it. We're the ones who are awake and trying to wake other people up while our elected sit silent. And to me, their silence is complicity.
Well, you know, one of the guys, syndicated radio guys, who's also an author, Michael Savage, I'm sure you guys have heard of him, he is adamant about borders, language, and culture. If you lose those three, you might as well just kiss it goodbye. And that's what's been going on for how many decades and decades and decades, and we could go on and on about, you know, we've all studied history, we've tried to learn how far back this goes. I know Ron has helped us a lot, other people have helped us, Terry Rowland, yourself. I've tried to get into history as much as possible. The book after this one, I'm going to read Hayek's Road to Serfdom, and then I'm just lining them up. I'm going to read Jekyll Island. I'm going to read Bonhoeffer. I'm going to just keep going forward. So these, you know, the one thing that they did in the House, they passed the audit of the Fed, but then it will sit in the Senate until, you know, what freezes over. But it's a good start, because this is the first time in – how long, if ever, they've wanted to do this or even tried to do it.
I think it's the first time it was ever brought up for a vote.
Yeah, I believe
it's
so.
It's going to get shot down. You know Harry Reid's going to shoot it down in the Senate if he even brings it to the floor. And that's just like the bill they passed, the Bush tax cuts, but they're going to punish the wealthier.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to get shot down in the House. If it doesn't, then we're all in deep crap.
Yeah, I know. You're right about what we talked about yesterday. We have to take the Senate. I mean, I don't even know what else to say. In fact, all three sections we have to have. We cannot have, like I said, four more minutes of this POTUS. We just can't, let alone four more years. It would be totally over. I don't know what's going to happen.
I got to say, I am so greatly disappointed in the GOP because they are spineless. They
yes.
have no spines. Consistently violating the Constitution, and not a one of them says anything, does anything.
No, they don't.
Consistently using the EPA to push the cap and trade that was rejected by our House and Senate. Obama to go around and push issues that were defeated in the House and the Senate or could not pass there, then... why do we even need you? Because you do nothing.
I know. Well, you know, I got two emails from my task force. Ron says it's already over. Oh, Ron, please don't make me crazy. I know it's true, but it's making me crazy. Anyway, what was I going to say? From my task force on the anti-Agenda 21 crowd, they're getting a group together to go up to Sacramento on August 15th because they're protesting this carbon tax, carbon trade, and, you know, all this auction nonsense that's going to be going on, not only in August but also in November, I believe in November after the election. It's just horrible what's going on. I mean, everybody's standing up and doing what they can. There is no rule of law. It's the rule of men, and that's why I read that article, because this guy is, and that's why Savage calls him a pan-Leninist, because that's what he is. He's a naked Marxist and a pan-Leninist. It's true. They hit the nail on the head when they said that he would just, I've said it before, that if he had the opportunity to have one of those Bolshevik revolutions or a new system revolution with brute force like Mao Zedong, he'd do it in a heartbeat. I know. Remember that old movie, Alien, with Sigourney Weaver? That's what I see,
yes.
That alien, when I look at him.
Well, you know, I can actually see the similarities of what you're talking about. But it's not him when our others that are elected allow him to do it.
I know. It's like they're all traitors. They're all from the same trader pool. This is what we're up against, and I'm telling you, that's why I'm going locally to fight as hard as I can. And like I said, once I get seated down in front of these two people, I'm going to explain to them how far-reaching my little voice is going to go, and that everything. single person of the masses, everybody from not just Oceanside, but from Chula Vista to Sacramento and everything in between, I'm going to let them know about this stuff, and I'm going to explain to them, if you don't want, you know, nine-tenths of California that's halfway awake coming down on you, you better listen to what I'm saying. I'm going to tell them.
Well, I really don't think they care about that, Linda. They're just caring about the agenda, and once they get the agenda finalized and stuff, well, it don't matter what we thought or how we stand, and that's the problem. Our current group of elected, and I've read my congressman today. His name's Todd Young. I'm letting him know I'm over his crap. If you can't stand up and have the courage to say no, you violated the Constitution. No, you're breaking the law. If you can't speak out, if you sit silent, and then you only want whenever you get on something like he's on the Reins Act and he wants to brag about that. If you can't talk about the greatest threat facing our nation, which is UN Agenda 21, UN global elite control, then you are of no use at all.
Absolutely. Hi, Ron. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, guys. Hey, you know, Ron. it almost brings you to the brink of the old adage: if you can't beat them, join them. And I got news for you, and I hate to be a wet blanket, but you know, we've talked about this stuff, and you're right. It's not in me to quit, to say, oh, well, you know, geez, it's no big deal. But let's face the reality of the situation. Do you believe that the Second Amendment, when it says that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, do you believe that that means that government is not allowed to encroach upon that right for any purpose, any reason at all?
I do.
Right.
Well, so do I. Has that stopped the government from encroaching upon that right? No.
Well, I haven't seen anything stop the government from doing anything that the Constitution or our laws say they can't do.
That is precisely my point. Words don't matter. The truth
to these people
does not matter. The truth is what they tell you it is.
Right.
The law means what they tell you it means.
Right.
Shut up. Get your ass back in line before we haul you out and shoot you in the back of the head.
Right.
That's the scenario. Plain and simple.
Well, for me, that's what they'll have to do. As far as these elected, they want to track us everywhere. They want to know everything we're doing every second day. I want to be able to track them. I want to know where they're at after this election. I want to know where my congressman and my senator are at 24 hours a day. I think the public should have the right to know where they're at.
Sure.
We're supposed to be their bosses. Oh,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, that's a joke. And, you know, I forget who it was I heard interviewed a couple of days ago. And he was talking to a congressman from 1975. And in 1975, the congressman testified that at that time, in 1975, that a revolution would be impossible because of all of the government's surveillance capabilities.
Oh, my God.
That was in 75.
Wow.
He said, there's nothing you can keep secret.
Right.
If they want to know, they'll know. So imagine the giant leap forward they've made since that time.
Oh, my gosh. With the drones and the smart chips and all the rest of it?
Satellites.
So what's this stuff that was, I don't know if it, I didn't research it, but they were saying that the health care bill, that there's a portion there where they're mandating chip implantation in everybody?
I don't see it as a mandate for implantation, but there is, I think it was Section 213 or 613, I don't remember now, that talks about regulating medically implantable devices. And of course,
okay.
the government says, oh, no, we're talking about, you know, pacemakers and, yeah. But included in that is an RFID.
Oh, my God.
There is so much in that health care bill, Ron. If you've read it, you're like me, you know. There is so much in there that has never been spoken up to the public.
Well,
no,
do you realize? Do you realize right now? I believe the number was 23 states. State governments are no longer they're removing the offer of health care coverage for family members. So they'll offer you a plan to cover yourself or your spouse, but not your children.
Wow.
They see the writing on the wall.
Sure.
Your children will be able to stay on your policy until age 26, it's going to exponentially drive up the cost of their insurance policies.
Sure.
So in order to cut costs, they're going to remove that option. Also, there's 30-some-odd insurance companies that are not going to offer insurance coverage for children or dependents.
Well, I hope everybody's double-jointed and can bend over and kiss their butt, because that's what we're doing. We can kiss our butts goodbye, because with all these regulations on the energy cycle, with what they're doing to our food and our water, with the health care bill and all the mandates and stuff that are in there that they're not even talking about, with the small arms treaty and working with the UN to destroy our Constitution, I mean, we're up against it. We are up against it.
Yeah, we are.
And it's live or die.
And I got
everybody
news for you. Huh. Romney's not going to make it any damn better.
No.
Well, I've been saying all along, Ron, and you know this to be true. I'm glad you're on here, because how many elections has it came down to the last two people were both proponents for Agenda 21?
Oh,
yep.
God.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean,
yeah.
No matter who you choose, Agenda 21 was going to be pushed, whether it was the GOP or the Democrats. All they're doing is jockeying to see who's going to have the power over us. And that's where they're ignorant, because they won't have the power either. It'll be the global elite who have the power.
Exactly.
Well, I think they already have the power.
Well,
and,
I do.
You know, the only reason that it hasn't been pushed any further than it has thus far, is they, I don't know. I guess they don't want an outright revolt until later. I mean, I don't know. I can't give you a good answer for that.
Yeah, so what Bill's talking about is whether it's gun control, Agenda 21, or, you know, bigger government, we've had zero choice for how many elections except whenever we get Ron Paul, and he's not going to be in office anymore. I mean, it's sad. It's really a sad day.
Well, and to prove the point, I mean, you know, how many people, look at the number of people that go out and vote in a presidential election.
Right.
I mean, that to me proves the point beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Oh, the low percentage of turnout? Yeah.
Even when they know, even when they know, okay, even people that know that, you know, your vote is not what elects the president, but they still run out and participate anyway. It's like the, you know, I liken it to the people that run out and play church.
Yeah.
Well,
you're
dead right, Ron, because they don't understand when they should be going after the delegates and trying to sway their votes. Instead, they're thinking that their vote's what's going to make a difference. And they don't realize that their vote doesn't count.
Right. Oh, well, they don't want to realize that, because then that would be admitting something that they don't want to face. And the fact of the matter is, they want to be able to stand out on the street corner and beat their chest and say, yeah, well, I didn't vote for that jerk. I voted for Obama. Or, yeah, I didn't vote for that jerk. I voted for Romney. So it's all your fault, you know. That's all it is.
Sure.
It's just a bunch of crap.
Yeah, it gets to you after a while. Because you don't know, you know, it's like, how do you untangle the tentacles and the tangled web and the mess and the unconstitutionalness of it all? I mean, it's just been ripped to shreds. And how do we do it? I mean,
the only way I can see through it is to have some kind of earth-shattering, extinction extinction level event where 2/3 of the people on the entire planet are like vaporized in some kind of solar flare, and the only ones that remain are folks that are into the idea of freedom and individual. I mean, seriously.
I know.
Well, let's be real serious here. Let's just put this in a real perspective. If the global elite were left by themselves on the planet, they would die.
Oh, yeah.
They would not. They themselves would not be able to feed themselves or do any of the other things for themselves. They wouldn't be able to. They would die.
Well, they'd die of stupidity, for one,
exactly.
And starvation.
Well, there wouldn't be anyone for them to boss around and tell them to do things for them.
Yeah, that would be it. They would just wither and die.
And society reminds me, there was a commercial some time ago, and I forget what company it was, but there was this giant hole in the ground and just millions of people running and just leaping into this hole. That's where we're at.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I've seen that one on the internet. I've seen it. They're mindless sheeple. It's horrible. I know. I keep trying to wake people up. I feel like I'm fighting a losing battle, though, but I can't give up. I just can't.
Well, so. No, we got to continue the fight because we're doing everything by our faith. And, you know, you have to do that because to give up is to change who you are in your heart and everything else. And I can't do that. I cannot give up and submit to what they're trying to do. I have sent my entire family down and told them. More than likely, before it's all said and done, my government, that's right, my government will kill me.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I know it freaks some of them out when I say that, but they're not understanding that the black depth that our government has sank into, and that our government, rather than have someone out here criticize it and tell the truth, would just as soon kill you.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
And that's not a great commentary on how far we've sunk down. I still hope that there is a ray of hope and that God is, I know he's still in charge, praise the Lord, because he is our only hope.
But yet we keep electing people who, once they get in there, forget everything that they said before they got in there. Or they're just the liars to begin with. It would be great to have some kind of a system that you could put these elected people into so that when they're on C-SPAN or something like that, you know if the bastards are lying or telling the truth.
Yeah, hook them up to a lie detector like Johnny Carson did.
Well, you know they're lying because their lips are moving.
Yes, basically it. We're living in a sad time. And the ones who love our country are out here and they're fighting and they're doing everything they can do short of violence, because I think that, I am tied in there too, hoping beyond hope that we can win this pack without violence and turn our country around and into a right direction. But as long as we keep getting the kind of people in office who, once they're in there, forget their oath, forget all the promises and all the talk, and go in there, and as soon as something's offered to them, whether it's some kind of trade deal or whatever, they sell out the people they swore to protect.
Well, you know, I was watching, and I'm most loathe to admit that I was watching Fox Business tonight when I was on my treadmill earlier. And I don't know, they got the blonde bimbo on there and some economist with a bow tie, and clearly he's a Keynesian. I mean, you know, the guy's just in the tank and drinking the Kool-Aid. And they said something about Ron Paul and auditing the Fed. And, you know, this guy said, well, you know, Ron Paul's, you know, if Ron Paul had his way, we wouldn't have any paper money and we'd be back on the gold standard. And she goes, oh, yeah. Let me play you this clip of a heated conversation or disagreement me and Representative Paul had. And she played a clip, but it wasn't the clip she wanted. And the guy reasoned, and this is what, this just makes me want to pull my hair out when I hear people say this. And he said, look, you know, Ron Paul has got a lot of rhetoric about the gold standard, but he said, you know, that's great if you're running a presidential bid for the White House. He said, but if you really confront him on it and ask him, well, how would you run the economy on gold? Because our gold reserves are 1/100th of the overall money in our economy. So how would you operate an economy on 1/100th of the money we have currently? He said, and he doesn't have any answer for that. I'm thinking, okay, here's your first delusion. All that money that you're talking about, 90%+ of it is fiction. It exists on a computer somewhere electronically. It's represented by zeros and ones, okay, but it doesn't exist physically at all. And then you're somehow miraculously taking the complete total money supply outstanding of the U.S. economy, and you're putting it in freeze frame, and then you're going to value gold against that at some ridiculous amount that you come up with 1/100th of the overall money supply. And that's because you believe that you need to continue this fictitious price support structure crap that has been the bane of our existence and the cause of all this jerk crap to begin with. Holy crap. It just drives me nuts.
Yeah,
you know, as long as we pretend that, you know, that a car, an automobile, is worth $60,000 and the average three-bedroom home is worth, you know, $500,000 or more if you're in California, and in Georgia it's worth a couple hundred thousand. And all these numbers are based on something other than reality, an alternate reality, a fiction.
Right. Well, that's where so many people live. They're like on Mars. They don't even, there's no logic, there's no reality, there's no common sense. It's just libtardness. I don't understand it. It's hard for me.
The guy making those comments fails to understand, too, that all that paper money actually doesn't equal nothing but debt.
Right.
Right.
Well, and you know, truly, in any kind of a fractional reserve system, money is debt. It serves a couple of functions. But the oddity of it, and it's, I guess, difficult to explain, you know, we could say, why is an ounce of silver currently worth $28? Well, it's not. Okay? It's that $28 is worth an ounce of silver. Okay? So now you got this two-way argument. It's the purchasing power of whatever the medium of exchange is. What the public, what the marketplace is willing to accept.
Right.
In exchange for goods or services. That's all it is.
You tell that guy to get handfuls of cash, and you put him out into a district where most people are trading and bartering stuff back and forth, and see how much he can buy.
Exactly. Oh, I
know. Yeah, his ass will starve to death because money don't mean crap to some people. I don't want your money, but I'll take your chickens or your pig or something. But I don't want your money because it's useless to me.
Well, it's absolutely. Like
we just saw the government going out into the hills of the mountainous regions of the Appalachians and stuff, and try and tell these people, well, you need to be on food stamps. These are people that are growing their own food and have survived that way for generations. And now you're telling them, oh, well, you need to quit that and come onto the government program. And you know those people looking at them like, you're just a damn revenue.
Right. Right,
get
you know.
Back.
Yeah, there's a fish hook in that government food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as they live now, they don't have to put up with the government a lot. And you start doing that, well, then you're going to have to deal with the government a whole lot, which means the government's going to be more in your business. And that's the last thing these people want. That is the problem in this nation. The government is too much in our business.
Right. And I still like the old saying that Reagan did. He said, the most terrifying sentences is, I'm here from the government and I'm here to help. Terrifying.
Well, they left off the part, see. I'm here from the government, and I'm here to help myself.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They don't tell you that.
Right, but I'm going to disguise it in under the cloak of helping others.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Because they have to steal it from someone else. They don't create a damn thing except living hell for the rest of us with their stupid regulations and their Cass Sunsteins and the rest of them. And that's why we're so upset, and that's why people are pushing back. I still hold out hope because there's a lot of people in my area standing up doing great things, putting out the word. They're going to go up to Sacramento in a big van, and they're going to go in August, and they're going to protest against this stupid carbon auction that's happening in California.
Well, you know, for as smart as the founders were, okay, I'm willing to bet that if one man would have stood up at the convention and said, okay, so here's what we're proposing without all the pros and the pretty wording. We're going to allow the people to elect 535 people to go to Washington and create obligations in their name. You wouldn't have got it ratified. You wouldn't have had a snowball's chance in hell.
That's correct. Yeah, I don't know what was going on in their heads, except I just don't, except maybe they knew that they wanted this to happen, so I don't know, not all of them, but I know some did.
You know, they were trying to figure out a way to make the states beholden to the federal government in case of a war, so they wouldn't end up upside down and backwards like they did during the Revolutionary War.
Right, right.
But without giving the government so much authority that they could become what it is.
Well, here's the deal. I think that the original, without all the, you know, the amendments that we all hate, the ones that came after whatever time period, If we would have kept to that, I think, and we would have not bastardized the words and the meanings with Hegelian dialectic, I think we would have stood a chance. You know, and of course we'd have to have an educated body politic to go along with it and a few morals thrown in. But, you know, I do want a lot, don't you?
Well, you know, from where I stand, the government has become the Catholic Church of the late, you know, 6th century. What they've done is they've converted the law and the Constitution to Latin. And so thoroughly and perfectly have they done so that not even they can interpret what the hell it means.
Well, I have 4 years of Latin. I can't understand what they're doing.
They can't either. I mean, when you've got 11 district courts in the United States and they can't agree on one section of the law, they all have different interpretations. What the hell does that tell you?
Yep.
It's not law at all. It's opinion.
That's all. It's their own personal opinion.
And guys, I want to thank you for...
We're seeing it all over the place.
Yeah, I got about 1 minute and 3 seconds, and Scott, thank you for helping me out and calling in and listening to my rants and my history and my...
God bless, guys.
God bless everybody, and I've got 90 seconds. Bill, thanks so much. Everybody in the chat room, Doc, Bill, Ron, Oz, Yo, FT, Jomer, and Kyra, great show with all you guys' help, and we're going to keep fighting, Bill, I'm telling you. Not giving up. I have to have some optimism.
God
praying
bless America.
All you guys. Go ahead.
God bless everybody. God bless America once. God can bless us again. But we've got to get out there and do our part. And our part is to be the educators and the informers.
You betcha. God bless everybody on this Patriot site and everyone who's listening, and you too, Bill, and all your old family. And, of course, I always do you guys by name at night when I talk to the Lord. So tune in tomorrow for Terry's Patriot Education. She's amazing. And, of course, check out www.patriotfamilies.com so that you can find out all the information of all of our great shows throughout the week. And we will enjoy that. And I want to say good night. God bless and have a great one. I'll go into the other chat room for y'all and see what we've got going on. I saved that one link, too, that I think Oz put up or somebody put up, FT maybe. McCarran Park. So interesting stuff, links and everything. God bless. Love you guys. See you. Take you down the chat room.